श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, वीर बाप महोत्सव श्री श्री राधा रमन जी की जय, वीर बाप महोत्सव श्रीला माधवेंद्र पुरी पाद की जय, वीर बाप महोत्सव श्री श्रीनिवास आचार्य की जय, तिरु बाप महोत्सव श्री परमेश्वर ठाकुर की जय, गौर हरि बोल। So, pranam to all of you. Welcome. Thanks so much for your presence today. Thanks so much to Amritanam, Langi, and all the team of Flute Songs Farm for inviting us again here, trying to follow the Venugit, the flute song, the clarion call of Sri Hari. So, bringing us all together here, that's the idea. And if the flute sounds somewhere else, we will all run behind that. So, today we are celebrating many things, as you have just heard about the overdose of kijais before starting the class. So we are celebrating the manifestation of Sri Sri Radha Raman, but also some other appearances, such as Madhavendra Puripad, also Sri Srinivas Acharya, and also Parameshwari Thakur Sthirubhav Mahotsav. So, we will need like a four-day retreat to speak about all of them. So we have, with all our sadness, have to pick among one of these great events, and we will be speaking about Sri Sri Radha Raman today. And the appearance, if you want to call it somehow, Avirbhav, manifestation of Sri Sri Radha Raman. So this is a very interesting topic and quite connected with what we spoke yesterday. Yesterday we were celebrating Sri Nrisimha Chaturdasi, and we maybe spoke about that from a little bit of kind of unexpected viewpoint, trying to emphasize Mahaprabhu and how Nrisimhadev is an aspect of Sriman Gaurangadev, and how Nrisimhadev expressed himself to Mahaprabhu in so many ways. And we as Gaudiya Vaishnavas actually worship the Nrisimha portion in Mahaprabhu, in our golden lion, Gaur Simha. So today I also similarly, although it seems I'm speaking about something different, we are trying to connect, speaking about Radha Raman by beginning, starting about talking about Prahlad Maharaj, which again you may ask, what's the connection between Prahlad Maharaj and Radha Raman? What's the connection between Santa Rasa and Braja Bhakti, if you will? But it's pretty much connected, especially in the case of Sri Sri Radha Raman. in the same way as we mentioned yesterday, Mahaprabhu was here in Prahlad Charit from the lips of Gadadhar Pandit hundreds of times, and somehow he was able to connect Prahlad Maharaj's life with, remember what? Which was the deepest meaning why Mahaprabhu was here in Prahlad Charit? Yeah, because he was deeply cultivating Radha Bhav, and in Radha Bhav, in the Parakya of Sri Radha, she has to go through so many obstacles on a daily basis to make her way to the Abhisar, in the love journey to meet Krishna in the Kunja. So as she has to go through so many obstacles, Mahaprabhu will hear Prahlad Charit and hear and empathize with so many obstacles Prahlad has to go through, and in the ways that is acting as an udipana or a stimulant for Mahaprabhu's own culture of Radha Bhav. So there is place for connecting. If you have the, how to say, if you have the bhav, you can connect everything in a proper way, basically. So today, as Mahaprabhu connected Prahlad Charit with Radha's Parakya Bhav, we'll try to follow in his footsteps and try to connect Sri Prahlad Maharaj with Sri Radha Raman. So it's very interesting because, for example, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, one of the most important sections of the Bhagavat is called the Bhava Chatushloki. And we have the Tattva Chatushloki of the Bhagavatam, which are the four verses that Bhagavan speaks to Brahma at the beginning of creation. But there is another Chatushloki termed by the Acharyas called Bhava Chatushloki, which somehow gives the essence of what the Bhagavatam is about, all of which will eventually blossom in the 10th canto. And we find that in a very unthinkable section, which is one spoken by an asura called Britrasura. You have heard about Britrasura. I won't enter into the details. But there are four verses that Britrasura recites, four prayers to Bhagavan, which have been termed by some of our acharyas as Bhava Chatushloki, or the essence of what the Bhagavatam wants to give us. And what the Bhagavatam wants to give us is coming to us through a demon, quote-unquote. Of course, if you study the prayers of Brita Asura, you will say, this is not an Asura. Just the name is there. No? But the prayers are speaking about something else. In the same way, someone may appear as a devotee and may behave as an Asura. No? The interesting situation was that. Brita Asura with Indra. Indra was not behaving that much as a devotee. Many occasions of the Bhagavatam, he's our guru for what not to do. But he's a devotee on some level. Sakam Bhakta. While someone like Brita Asura, apparently is a demon, but the essence of Bhagavatam is flowing through him. So my point is, Bhakti Devi, in her independence, in her Yadrichayatva, or in her free will, is moving and choosing where to manifest and through whom to manifest. So it comes to us in any form, if we are sincere, to catch her visit, if you want to put it like that. So in that same connection, another history of a quote-unquote demon that is more dear to Bhagavan than all the devas put together is that of Prahlad. Officially speaking, Prahlad Maharaj is born from a demonic womb, if you want to put it like that. No? He has Asuric blood, if you want to connect it in that way. But he's beyond the blood. No? We are not this body, we are not this blood. So Prahlad is somewhere else. Indeed, Prahlad, the very name Prahlad indicates his inner standing. Prahlad. Lad has to do with Ladini Shakti. And Pra speaks about how especially Prakishta Ladini Ashrita, I say. He is taking a special shelter in Ladini Shakti, which is the essence of the Swarup Shakti, if you want to put it somehow. He has taken full shelter in Bhakti, basically. So he's totally engrossed and covered by Krishna's internal energy. That Krishna says in the Gita, 9th chapter, Mahatmanastu mam partam daivim prakritim ashrita. He says, a Mahatma, a great soul, which basically means my devotee, Krishna only uses the term Mahatma to refer to his devotees, I say, is someone who has taken shelter under the influence of divine nature, daivim prakriti. That means Swarup Shakti. So Prahlad is basically the very person who embodies this act. Now, his very name is saying that, Prahlad. He's fully into Ladini Shakti, although he appeared in a demonic family. So you have these two things that you have to know what to do with them. No? We have to harmonize, basically. So we mentioned yesterday, briefly, we were celebrating Nrisimha Chaturdasi, Nrisimha's quote-unquote birth. So which was the womb through which Nrisimhadev took birth? What will you say to that question? Pillar? We have some difference of opinion here. Some say pillar, some say Prahlad's bhakti. So, of course, in a technical way, he was born from a pillar, but in a substantial way, we never hear, Krishna is known as Yashodanandan. But we never hear Nrisimha called Stambanandana, no? The son of a pillar or something. No? I understand technically we could say that and it's a fact, but we know that actually Nrisimhadev is appearing by the force of Prahlad's bhakti, by the force of how Ladini Shakti is expressing itself through Prahlad. Because again, technically, substantially speaking, Nrisimhadev is appearing because of Prahlad's bhakti. Krishna is the deity of Prahlad, as my Guru Maharaj points. Prahlad is not having Nrisimhadev at his Istadev. Krishna is his Istadev. Krishniye Matirastu, so many sections in the Bhagavatam make that clear. But interestingly, his deity, Krishna, appeared in a, of course, suitable way for the necessity of the moment, basically. Out of the bhakti of Prahlad. And again, the bhakti of Prahlad is for Krishna, as his Istadev, not for Nrisimha. So Krishna is appearing, but in a particular packaging, if you will. So he can deal with the particular situation there. So it is because of Prahlad's bhakti that Nrisimhadev is appearing out of the column. The pillar may be the second mother of Nrisimhadev, if you want to put it like that. The first mother is Prahlad's bhakti, Prahlad's heart, and because of that, Bhagavan manifests accordingly. And as we briefly mentioned yesterday, and with this I'm trying to connect all this, of course, with Sri Sri Radharaman, but for that to happen, we have to have a glimpse of what's the nature of Prahlad's bhakti. And again, please do not... We have to be very careful not to rush and say, but Prahlad Maharaj is not a Raganuga Bhakta, he's not a Ragatmika, he's not... So, what do we have to learn from him in order to enter the Braj? Well, a few things, to be sure. Mahaprabhu made that point by hearing Prahlad Charit 108 times and asking for anayor, more, again. So, as we mentioned yesterday, if we want to highlight two aspects of Prahlad Maharaj's bhakti, as they are very connected to what Santarasa is about, will be this aspect of selflessness and universal compassion, which Prahlad Maharaj very nicely exhibited in his prayers, in his own example. And again, these elements, although them in themselves do not constitute the all-in-all of Raga Bhakti, they are very crucial foundational stepping stones that you have to have in place for constructing the temple of Braja Bhakti. We want to erect a whole mandir in our heart, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say, Mama Mandir. But if you have a minimum idea of architecture, first you have to have the foundation in place. Because the temple may be nice, but if the foundation is not nice, that won't last for long. So we want something that may last forever. Basically, we want to enter into that temple and inhabit there for the rest of eternity. So the foundation has to be there. And foundation is, Rupa Goswami is saying, what's uttam bhakti? Anyabhilasita sunyam jnana karma adhyanavritam. To begin with, the tatastha lakshan of uttam bhakti. Being free from all ulterior motives, from all selfish desire. And here you have the very personification of that principle in one sense. Prahlad Maharaj. As we know, when... Hiranyakashipu was dealt with by Nrisimhadev. He eventually asked Prahlad Asirbat. I mean, he gave Prahlad Asirbat blessing. What do you want from me? As my Guru Maharaj likes to put it, I am Bhagavan. I am famous for giving blessings. So I want to give you some blessing. And Prahlad looked at him and said, I mean, do I have like Vaisya face? Like a merchant face? Do you think that I'm worshipping you just for asking you something in return? Do not make my heart suffer in that way. I'm just worshipping you for the sake of yourself. Bhakti for the sake of bhakti. Bhaktiya sanjataya bhaktiya, says the Bhagavatam. Bhakti comes from bhakti, and bhakti goes to bhakti. That shows the supremacy of bhakti. Bhakti has no other source other than itself, has no other goal other than itself. Sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, prema bhakti, but bhakti, bhakti, bhakti. So that's the very idea of the integrity and the nobility of our ideal, and it shows very clearly how bhakti is the supreme avideya, as Sri Jiva Goswami puts in his Bhakti Sandarbha. Other practices, you engage in karma, you engage in jnana, you engage in yoga, you have another goal in mind different from the practice you are engaging in. You engage in karma to attain swarga, you engage in jnana to attain sayuja, you engage in yoga to attain siddhi, you engage in bhakti to attain bhakti. So that, and all the other processes require bhakti to give their fruits. Karma, jnana, yoga at one point require being mixed with bhakti to be fruitful. So of course Srila Jiva Goswami says an intelligent person will think, if every other practice requires bhakti to be fruitful, what if I only engage in bhakti exclusively? That will be, as they say, the real deal, basically. So bhakti is sadhana and bhakti is sadhya. Sadhya bhakti is sadhana bhakti. So Prahlad Maharaj is replying in that way, showing his selflessness. That's my point. I don't want anything apart from, of course, further bhakti, upgraded bhakti. That's what Rupa Goswami says. Tunde tanda vinira timbitanute tundavali labdhaye. Karna krodha kadam vini gathayate karunar budhivya spriham cheta prangana sangini vijayate sarvendriyanam kritim no jane janita kiyat viramritaya krishneti varnam dhvai. Rupa Goswami says, I don't want anything, but if I can ask something, Krishna, I'll ask something. Okay, what to do? Please give me 1,000 years. So to properly honor the nectar that is flowing from those two syllables, Krishna, I don't think 2 years are enough. I don't make injustice to all the nectar that is coming. So give me 1,000 years, please. And then if I can ask something more, if it's possible, no? It's in the context of being selfless. No? Give me 1,000 tongues. No? And 1,000 is not 1,000 only, as you know. Unlimited tongues so I can properly host that divine nectarian descent through the holy name and make justice. I feel that with only one tongue, I'm being an aparadi only. No? He's singing purely, but he's feeling so much is coming that only one tongue is not able to catch all that nectar and properly honor that. So that's it, the effect. That's a type of prayer in the context of selflessness also. No? I don't want anything for me, but I'm asking all these extra ears and tongues to further engage myself in bhakti, further engage honor bhakti. So this idea of Prahlad on a foundational way. Again, I'm not comparing him with Rupa Goswami in every sense, but in a selfless foundational level, that has to be there. He's trying to serve. I mean, sometimes this idea came, we actually are not serving, trying to feel something. We are trying to feel something so we can serve, basically. No, we are not trying just to feel something so we can do something with that feeling. I want to feel. No, I want to serve. In order to serve, I need to feel, okay, I want to feel something so I can serve. But I don't want to enjoy bhava. Bhava is not something to be enjoyed. We find these great examples of personalities from ecstasies dawning on them, and they're cursing the ecstasy because that's getting in the way of their serving. One famous example of Daruka, like taking the upavita and cursing the ecstasy. I curse you. A unique type of curse there. No? Get out of my way. I want to serve my Prabhu. And of course, the ultimate application of this selflessness ends up in Golok. But in one sense, it all begins at the feet of someone like Prahlad. To follow my point. So when we hear all the rasas up to Madhurya, include the previous ones, in one sense means the selflessness that you find in Prahlad has to be in the gopas and gopis in Braj. No? You have to pass that test, that homework first in order to... I mean, you have to learn to appreciate Prahlad's selflessness in every inhabitant of Vrindavan, which outwardly may seem mundane if you don't have a trained eye. You may say, this is ordinary, but it's aprakrita, as we know. It seems ordinary, but it's super transcendental, actually. So one side, we have this. I said I will briefly analyze this, but what to do? Not getting lost and found in Prahlad's glories. Prahlad Maharaj ki jai. So on one side we have Prahlad's selflessness, but on the other side we have universal compassion. These two points that I want to emphasize so we connect from here and go to Radharaman's Abhirbhav. So as we know, part of what Prahlad asked was, I don't want anything, do not ask anything from me. But Nrisimhadev insisted, because that's his nature, Bhakta Vatsalya. No? My devotee is my servant, and Bhagavan feels I am the servant of my devotee. No? In the mutual loving relationship between Bhakta and Bhagavan, none of them feel I am Bhagavan, actually. God's abhiman or self-consideration is I'm a servant of Prahlad. That's how Nisringha's psychology is working. I'm his servant. And Prahlad is thinking, I'm his servant. So the two parties are thinking how to serve each other. That's basically the dynamics. So Nrisimhadev insisted, I want to bless you. And Prahlad Maharaj eventually, as you know, he asked, please, okay, I'll have to ask something. Do not allow any selfish desire to come into my heart. So actually he didn't ask anything for him. And then he said, and please bless my father. And of course, as my Guru Maharaj said yesterday, Nrisimhadev said, that's already done. That's, of course, we know who is Hiranyakasipu ultimately. From the bigger picture, there are gatekeepers in Vaikuntha. But in the context of the Leela and of highlighting Prahlad's, again, universal compassion, he's asking anything for him and asking, please save my father. And of course, if you know the story in a minimum way, Prahlad is asking for the highest blessing for he who we may term my worst enemy in my life, basically. For that person who tried to kill you 108 times, who happened to be your father. So generally, it's not so easy to... If I have only one prayer to present to Bhagavan, to connect that with the person who tried to kill me 108 times, the worst possible way. But Prahlad is doing that. You follow my point? I mean, we have to walk Prahlad's talk in order to approach Vrindavan in a realistic, substantial way. And as we know, Prahlad said eventually, and if you want to offer me liberation, I don't want to be liberated myself. I want everyone else to be liberated. I don't want to be liberated just myself and going anywhere without all these personalities in this world, all the jivas in this world. So Srila Jiva Goswami, interestingly, in the Bhakti Sandarbha, he says, okay, Prahlad asked from Nisrinadev the blessing, please free, deliver all the jivas. So the question can be, why we are here then? It seems that maybe Nisrinadev didn't fulfill his promise to Prahlad. So Jiva Goswami is mentioning, interestingly, no, Prahlad prayed, freed all those jivas. And when he said that, Jiva Goswami said, he was referring to all the jivas he could have in mind at that moment. So all of them were freed. And the question is, and what about the rest of them? Nisrinadev told Prahlad, for those who hear about your qualities, all of them will be freed as well. So then we enter into that part of the equation. So there is hope. don't be sad. You have not been left out of the team, if you will. So he exhibited this extreme compassion in the midst of the greatest difficulties. That's not so easy. To be compassionate when you have plenty of obstacles in your life, it's easy to be compassionate when everything is going nicely. But he went to throw many obstacles. Sometimes Haridas Thakur in Gaur Lila, although he's Brahma, officially Brahma Haridas, sometimes Prahlad Maharaj is connected with Haridas Thakur. Not because he is Prahlad, because he has gone through so many obstacles. Like when he was beaten in the markets and so on. So in this way, Kavi Karnapur connected, okay, there's a part of Prahlad in Brahma Haridas, no? In the sense of how he went through all these beatings, and what did Haridas Thakur did at the end? He was fully compassionate to the ones who were trying to kill him. They were trying to kill him, and they were not able to kill him. So they were in anxiety because they couldn't kill him, because they will be killed themselves. So Prahlad Maharaj said, why you are suffering? And they say, because we cannot kill you. Oh, I don't want you to suffer because of me. So if you will die, if you will suffer because I'm not dying, I'll prefer to die so you don't suffer. That was what Haridas Thakur, and he died voluntarily. Of course, he reappeared a few days after, very Jesus-like dynamics there. But my point is, he couldn't tolerate, you are suffering because of me. And they were trying to kill him. Say, okay, no, I don't want you to cause any further trouble, so I'll die myself so you don't have to go through any trouble. So we find these examples of extreme compassion, like Vasudeva Datta and so many others in Gaur Lila, praying to Mahaprabhu, free everyone, give to me all the reactions of everyone. I remain here paying forever for them, but take all of them with you. Mahaprabhu say, if you say that, you are already on the other side, basically. So again, we have to relate with all the things. You know, Prahlad Charita is not just a nice story of a five-year-old boy that we can repeat once a year, and oh, Prahlad ki jai. But the real ki jai is to walk Prahlad's talk. And again, not in a neurotic way, not trying to imitate. Okay, bring me poison. No. And it will become nectar, because, I mean, if you have that faith, we may see a miracle, but again, you have to be on Prahlad's adhikar, basically. So it's important that we exhibit not only Prahlad's selflessness, or get closer to that, at least our heart is moved by hearing about that, but also, again, this point of universal compassion. And especially when things are not going according to our plan. I mean, comprehensive compassion will be exhibited outside of the comfort zone, technically speaking. From the comfort zone, which type of compassion is? Because compassion has to do with, there's something that is not inviting you to be compassionate, and nonetheless you are compassionate, basically. So we need to be put to test to see where we are standing in terms of universal compassion, basically. Because again, it's easy to say that, but Kunti Devi prayed for tests. Now we can say she prayed for suffering. I would like to say she prayed for being put to test. Not in a neurotic way, but I want to know where I am standing. I don't want to cheat myself and think, I'm here while I'm here, or I'm here while I'm here. whatever. I want to know where I am and where I can be eventually. And tests come to show that. So we have to give welcome to all of them. We have to host them. As in India, they say, Atithi Devo Bhavam. Now, a guest has to be treated as if God himself. Technically speaking, the word Atithi, which means uninvited guest. That's even more complicated. Treated like God himself. Why the idea? Because God himself comes to our life as an uninvited guest at every single moment in our life, in the form of tests. So that's an important thing to bear in mind. Okay, Krishna is visiting me through this particular situation that is kicking me out of the comfort zone, so I exhibit universal compassion, among other things. Because again, universal compassion, selflessness, is a preliminary insight before exhibiting whatever. Sneha, mam, pranaya, raga, nurag, bhav, mahava. We cannot even speak about that if the things are not if we are not work in progress for these things to happen. So we see how our acharyas have exhibited this very perfectly. Not only Prahlad, but getting more closer and closer to Sri Sri Radha Raman. Our Goswamis, they were put under so many obstacles. Sanatana Goswami was burning, trying to join Mahaprabhu, and he was put to jail. Big obstacle. He really wanted to join Mahaprabhu, you can imagine. But he was put in jail. So big obstacle, but the obstacle did not discourage him, but make his longing to grow, the fire of longing to grow even bigger. So if we are properly situated, obstacles will nourish our longing. Won't get in the way. Similar with, I don't know, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, he was not put in jail officially, but he felt his home to be jail because he wanted to escape and he tried many times and he was brought back. So all these obstacles coming to the life of our Goswamis were increasing their longing for eventually becoming part of Mahaprabhu's entourage. So in that way we arrive to Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who is one of these personalities, one of the six Goswamis, who also had to go through some interesting dynamics before, if you want to put, joining Mahaprabhu, although we will see he in one sense didn't join Mahaprabhu in a practical way. He was not with him that much, but we will see how this played out and which was the result of this, according to how he behaved. So here we start to connect our story today, no? From Nisrimha Lila Prahlad, don't lose sight of the bigger thread, from Nisrimha Lila to Gaur Lila now. So again, if we have eyes, we can connect all the things. So we hear Nisrimha Lila, we can be thrown into Gaur Lila and so on. There are so many other connections that we will try to share, but it's important that we develop this sensibility to connect the substance of all these different lilas. So as you know, Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he was born in South India. He was the son of Sri Venkata Bharta, who was the head priest of the Rangan temple in the South India, which is the main temple of the Sri Sampradaya. And Venkata Bhatta was the head pujari of the main temple of the Sri Sampradaya. So that's pretty big. And Gopal Bhatta was the son of his. So at one point Mahaprabhu, long story short, as a sannyasi, he's traveling in his parikram, he's visiting South India, and he stays at one point for Chaturmasya in the home of Venkata Bhatta. Traditionally, sannyasis in Chaturmasya in India there will stay in one place for those 4 months. So he stays there with Venkata Bhatta. Gopal Bhatta is there. Venkata Bhatta's brother, Prabodhananda Saraswati. He has another brother, Tirumala Bhatta. But again, Gopal Bhatta there is a child. So try to imagine, you're a 5-year-old or something child and Mahaprabhu comes and stays in your house for 4 months. That's pretty samskaric. No? You will receive lots of bhakti samskars.
Pretty what?
Sorry?
Pretty what?
Samskaric. A play of words. I'm always creating words. Like something that creates samskars, impressions. No? Devotional impressions. Of course, Gopal Bhatta is a Nitya Parishad eternal associate, but in the context of the unfolding of the Lila, he's pretty much like impressed by Mahaprabhu's visit, as we will see. And also because his whole family go through a very crucial, if you want to call it, conversion from Sri Sampradaya to Sri Vaishnavism to Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And the crucial point here is the famous moment in which Mahaprabhu asks Venkata Bhatta about Lakshmi Devi and her attempt to enter Rasa Lila. An interesting exchange where Mahaprabhu will see he basically converts Venkatavata by joking. My Guru Maharaj likes to highlight this point. No? The power of Mahaprabhu's achar was such, his example, his conduct was so powerful that sometimes he converted these great personalities without too much argument. He converted the great Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the greatest logician earth, by being silent. That's pretty powerful. Someone invites you to a debate, 1 week debate, and all you have to say is just nothing. And you won the debate by that. That seems nonsensical, but that's how Mahaprabhu defeated Sarvabhauma, basically. At the end, he says some words like checkmate, but the 99.9% of the conversion was Mahaprabhu in silent hearing Sarvabhauma, basically. And then he said two words about Vedanta, and Sarvabhauma was jumping and dancing with Mahaprabhu and Sankirtan. No? Prakasananda Sarasvati, similar, with full humility, he conquered him and his 60,000 sannyasis, exhibiting silent humility. And with Venkatavata, joking, as we will see. Mahaprabhu asked Venkatavata what? Venkatavata, you are the worship of Lakshmi Narayan. So I would like to ask you why your goddess, while she wanted one to have a rendezvous with Krishna. She wanted to join Rasa Lila. The Shastra is saying that. Mahaprabhu was not creating anything. So she wanted to leave Narayan to join Krishna? I mean, she's known as Sati, very chaste one, the chastest of all. She wants to join Krishna. And Venkatavata replied that according to Tattva, of course, Narayan and Krishna are one. So there was no problem, basically. There was no parakya, basically. Because he was the same person. So no problem. Okay. According to Bhava, they are different. According to Tattva, Krishna and Narayan are the same. Vastu, the same entity. So Mahaprabhu said, okay. But then I have another question, which is why she was not able. She was not successful. She didn't accomplish that. So at this point, Venkatavata started to enter into some vimohan. No, he followed the footsteps of Brahma. He had started to spin. So I don't know. The one who asked this question is the one who knows the answer. I could even think about making the question. What to speak of replying that? And as we know, Mahaprabhu then replied, to put it in my Guru Maharaj's words, that Lakshmi was performing extreme tapasya in Belvan, trying to attain Rasa Lila, and one day Krishna is coming and seeing the royal goddess of fortune, who is, adorned by Aishwarya from tip to toe, wearing a white sari, very, how do you say when it's like tore apart, whatever? Like this, but white. And sitting eating roots from the forest. Royal lady, this is 10,000 the Queen of England multiplied or more. And Krishna's seeing Lakshmi, said, Lakshmi, what you are doing here? I said, I want to train Rasa Lila. I said, but that's not the way. That's not the way to train Rasa Lila, to engage in extreme tapasya. So Lakshmi said, what's the way? Why? Why she asked that? So now Krishna will reply, well, it's easier than that. For him it was easier. So as my Guru Maharaj would like to say, no? Krishna said to Lakshmi, well, first of all, you have to leave your husband, Narayan. Which at that point, Lakshmi was already just collapsing. No? To think about leaving Narayan, it's not possible. She's never leaving her feet. And that's only the first part of the equation. First you have to leave Narayan, and then you have to marry some Gopa in Vrindavan. And then you have to leave that husband, and then you have to join me in Rasa Lila, in Parakya Bhav. So, at this point, Lakshmi was now Bimohan. No, it was, no, I cannot do that. It's not possible. So, figuratively to say, still to this day, she's in Belvan performing tapasya, I'm not able to enter Rasa Lila, to make that particular point. So, my point is, with this, Mahaprabhu is shedding these Bhakti Samskars, Braja Bhakti Samskars, into Venkatavata and the whole of the family. So Gopal Bhatta becomes really much inspired with this, and he wants to join Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu continues a sannyasi, and he was asking Mahaprabhu basically, ask myself as a dakshina to my parents or something like that, no? Because generally, when the sannyasi is leaving, what dakshina do you want? No? Tell them that you want me and take me with you or something. He was five years old, something. But Mahaprabhu told him, no, your parents are very special Vaishnavas. Take care of them, and when they pass away, you go to Vrindavan and join Rupa and Sanatan, and eventually we will re-meet again in the future, there. So Gopal Bhatta accepts, he shares the plan to his parents, who also accept that he will join them till they pass away, and then he will meet Mahaprabhu. It is said that in the years that came, Gopal Bhatta prepared the first notes for what it will be eventually Hari Bhakti Vilas, which Sanatana Goswami also is connected with that work. But it is said Gopal Bhatta wrote the initial notes, as he did with the Sandarvas as well, interestingly. But anyhow, that's another conversation. So eventually, Gopal Bhatta, again, Gopal Bhatta's parents leave this world, and he goes to Vrindavan to join Sri Rupa and Sanatana, who were living there at the time. And Mahaprabhu, who was not in Vrindavan, he was in Puri at the time, he receives the news. Gopal Bhatta is there, and he sends a gift to Gopal Bhatta. So he sends his bahirbas, or his kaupin, loincloth, and he sends also his asana, which means, symbolically speaking, that nowadays they are in Radharaman Mandir, getting closer to Radharaman. Bear with me. But they are there. You can have darshan of Mahaprabhu's asana and this gift that he sent to Gopal Bhatta. So arguably, these gifts, kopin and asana, symbolize that Mahaprabhu wanted Gopal Bhatta to be the Diksha Guru among the Goswamis. That he will perform that particular function. As you know, most of the Goswamis did not initiate anyone. Rupa Goswami only initiated Jiva Goswami. Sanatana Goswami didn't have Diksha disciples, nor Raghunath Das, and so on. But Diksha Guru function was performed mostly by Gopal Bhatta. And maybe Mahaprabhu, for this, of course, is not that he was more qualified and one was more and less qualified. Be careful with thinking in those terms when you speak about Nitya Siddhas. No, this is better, this is worse. But each of them were having a particular function, as you know. Sanatana Goswami, Sambandacharya, Rupa Goswami, Avideya, Rasacharya, Raghunath Das Goswami, Prayojanacharya, and so on. Jiva Goswami, Tattvacharya. Raghunath Bhatta Goswami will be the cook. That's important. Don't think that's less important. And reciting Bhagavatam in a very unique way. And Gopal Bhatta Goswami will perform this Diksha function, arguably because Mahaprabhu considered in a relative consideration, which nonetheless is important. He said, you come from a very prestigious background, South Indian Brahmin family, so that in the eyes of the society of the time will have some weight. So you will be the guru. So it's a relative consideration, but we see how Mahaprabhu was sensitive to these things. So eventually, Gopal Bhatta Goswami is there receiving these gifts, and Mahaprabhu then reveals to him in a dream, interestingly. And remember, Mahaprabhu told him, you will meet me again. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami was counting the days when this will happen. He already, his parents left, he went to Vrindavan, he met Rupa and Sanatana, now Mahaprabhu sent these gifts, but he has promised, we will meet again. So Mahaprabhu appears in a dream to Gopal Bhatta and say, if you want my darshan, you go to Nepal. Mysterious message. Because you may think, come to Puri or go to Navadvip and whatever, meet someone, but go to Nepal is like, I don't know. I mean, it's close to India, but it's not the Dham or whatever you may idealize. So Gopal Bhatta goes to Nepal, basically. You know? He follows the instructions. So as we know, long story short, getting closer to Sri Radharaman, he's in the Gandaki River, who flows also in Nepal. And at one point he's taking his lota, you say in English? To take some water for his bathing and so on. But inside the lota and the water, there are 12 salagram shilas there. So it's like, no, in that place is where salagram are found. So 12, not only one, 12. I say, he puts them back in the Gandaki. No? So he takes again water. Second time, 12 salagram shilas, the same ones. Because each one have their marks. So he checked the same one. Back to the water. Always the third time is more auspicious. Takes water third time, 12 salagram shilas. So then Gopal Bhatta kind of concludes, okay, they want to come with me. So he takes them with him and starts to worship them. He goes back to Vrindavan, still trying to figure out in which sense Mahaprabhu is giving me my dar. I came to Nepal, this happened, pretty obvious. That has something to do with that. He made those connections, but still full circle hasn't arrived yet. No? In which way Mahaprabhu is giving me his darshan through these 12 Salagram Silas. So in the context of that, they say that Gopal Bhatta Goswami also received some clothes for dressing deity, but dressing a deity with Nara rup, not like for human form with arms and not Salagram doesn't fit into that description basically. So he wanted to have a deity with human form to worship Krishna, to worship Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu at this point had passed away from the world. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami was thinking, but he promised he will give me his darshan. And he passed away. And yeah, the silas are here, but how this all connects? No? So this type of situation happened very closely to Nrisimha Chaturdasi. So it is said that one Nrisimha Chaturdasi, a day like yesterday, Gopal Bhatta was having his silas. He was crying very deeply, lamenting about not having Mahaprabhu's darshan, about wanting to worship Radha and Krishna, and meditating on Prahlad's bhakti. Now comes the connection also, Narsimha Lila, Gaur Lila. He was deeply absorbed in remembering Prahlad's bhakti and how the strength of Prahlad bhakti is making Nrisimhadeva appear from the pillar. Again, Prahlad's bhakti is the womb through which Nrisimhadeva appear. So Nrisimhadeva appear from stone, if you will. So now Gopal Bhatta was thinking, why my Lord cannot appear from stone as well? Of course, Salagram is Bhagavan itself, but the particular form in which corresponding with Gopal Bhatta's bhava was yet to manifest. No? And he was thinking, if you can appear from a pillar, stone, because of the bhakti of Prahlad, of course, I'm not Prahlad. Gopal Bhatta, in his humility, will think, I have not Prahlad's bhakti. And we agree, he has not that bhakti. He has a higher one. But he was in his humility thinking, will you grace me by appearing somehow? And in that way, he lamented and cried. And that was his Nrisimha Chaturdasi celebration. No? We should pray to someday celebrate Nrisimha Chaturdasi in that way as well. And be ready for the surprise next day, what will happen as a result of that. As we know, then Gopal Bhatta Goswami, crying and lamenting deeply, fell asleep eventually. And next day, a day like today, he woke up. He used to carry these 12 silas in a basket that was with something on the top closed. So at this moment, the basket was open when he awoke a day like today. So he was like, oh, maybe a snake came and entered the basket. So he very like carefully approached the basket and opened. And I mean, there was a snake, if you want to put it in one way. If you want to speak in the psychology of the gopis, who will call Krishna sometimes, they're a black snake. I mean, Jatila uses to use that term mostly. The snake moves in a crooked way. No? And Krishna is Tribhanga Lalita. He's crooked also. Everything about him is crookedness. So in that sense, poetically speaking, we can say, Gopal Bhatta found the snake inside the basket. Actually, he found that the Damodar Shila, from the 12 Shilas, there was one Shila called Damodar Shila, and that Damodar Shila had turned into what we call today as Shri Radha Raman Ki Jai. So that's a pretty interesting epiphany for Gopal Bhatta. No? A pretty interesting reply to his prayers from the last night. I mean, he was really praying. Mahaprabhu really replied to that prayer. That's a point. And when you really pray, be prepared for the real result of that. I mean, if there's no result, probably we are not praying that really. No? But Krishna reciprocates accordingly, we know. So that's important. We shouldn't ever doubt he's not doing his job by reciprocating with me. Probably I'm not doing my job by approaching him properly. And that's why nothing is coming, probably. So that's part of our saranagati. Rakshishati vishvaso gopritvi varanam. He's protecting me, he's maintaining me. He's doing his job, if you will, in regarding to his devotee. Like maybe, as we say, my job is to trust that Krishna is doing his job, basically. That may be hard enough sometimes. But our faith should grow in that direction. So Sri Sri Radha Raman appears in this unique form, which, as we will see, is not accompanied by Sri Radha, but somehow combining the two. And if we speak about Sri Sri Radha and Krishna combining one form, we could say we could in some way speak about Mahaprabhu. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami not only, I mean, just to have one shalagram transformed into the beautiful deity of Radha Raman is enough epiphany, but in the context of that, Gopal Bhatta had so many other epiphanies, like, this is how Mahaprabhu has replied to his promise. He's giving me his darshan again, and not only for a minute. Because it's not that Mahaprabhu, okay, I give you my darshan, here I am, and disappear. That's my work. Now he's accompanying him in that darshan on a daily basis. So again, this is a very unique idea, as we spoke before, how bhakti moves in a yadrichaya, as the Bhagavatam say, in an independent way. You cannot expect when, where, how, unpredictable will. That's how it comes to our life. As we mentioned, it may come through someone like Vritrasura, thank you. Someone like Prahlad, coming from apparent demonic birds. Or Radha Raman manifesting from a place that you were not expect. No, I mean, for those who worship Shalagram Silas, probably you won't expect that one morning you have Radha Raman there. And no more Sila, but the Sila now is taking form. I mean, it's pretty unexpected, but that can happen. So, and of course, Radha Raman in that sense is considered basically a self-manifest deity. Not carved by human hands, but carved, in this case, out of Gopal Bhatta Goswami's love, to put it in poetry. And this is further confirmation of what Prahlad Maharaj said to Hiranyakashipu. As we know, Hiranyakashipu will ask Prahlad, is your God anywhere, everywhere in this pillar? Where is your God? No? Hiranyakashipu will ask. And Prahlad will say, where is my God not, basically? I mean, I'm seeing him everywhere. Srila Siddhar Maharaj once, he said, materialists doubt about the existence of the spirit. Like, say, we doubt about the existence of matter, he said, because we are seeing consciousness everywhere. The more you advance, the more consciousness comes to the foreground, becomes closer and closer, and the spirit, matter, basically, dissolves into the background. Once he said, spirit is called, how do you say? Matter is calcified spirit, or something like that. Like, trying to make the point, consciousness is all-pervading, basically. No? So that was the view of Prahlad. No? I'm seeing my Prabhu everywhere. No? It can appear from anywhere. So that's the situation here confirming. Radha Raman appearing from an unexpected place, basically. So in the same way as Narasimha Dev appear, if you will, from a rock, from a pillar, due to the bhakti of Prahlad, Radha Raman appear from another rock. I don't want to limit Shalagram to a rock, but somehow follow that context, format, due to the bhakti of Gopal Bhatta. Again, Shalagram, Govardhan, our Shilas are not just rocks, as I will say the other day joking. They are our real rock stars. So in the same way, Radha Raman appeared as a self-manifest deity, and he was carved out of Gopal Bhatta's bhakti. That's a point I always like to make. Krishna, the form of Krishna is the result of the affection of a devotee. If you put Hanuman in front, you won't have Krishna, you won't have Ramchandra. Because there is a bhakti in Hanuman which corresponds with a particular form of the Absolute, which is called Ram. So each form of the Absolute is a consequence of a certain type of bhakti. So bhakti is shaping Bhagavan, if you want to put it in one, poetically. You follow my point? If you change the type of bhakti, Bhagavan will appear in a different way. So this way, Gopal Bhatta had a particular type of love, and that carved, if you will, poetically, the form of Krishna. Tvam bhakti yoga paribhavita harit saroja sutrikshitapati nanunata pumsam. Says the Bhagavatam, jat jata urukaya vibhava yanti tattha dieta urukaya. Anyhow. So he's saying, Bhagavan reciprocates accordingly. It's a similar verse to Yatman Prabhadante. According to how the devotee meditates in Bhagavan, he will appear in a form that corresponds with that particular meditation. So in this way, we are Gaudiyas, but if we appreciate Prahlad's bhakti properly, that will give us a result, Braja bhakti. So we have to learn how, when we go through all these sections, these non-braja sections, if you will, how to appreciate them properly. So the result is braja bhakti. The result is Radha Raman. That was the case in Gopalbhatta. He was appreciating Prahlad's bhakti. The consequence of that was Radha Raman. It was not Nrisimhadev, if you will. So we should learn to go through all these sections in the Bhagavatam in such a way that is nourishing our Braja Bhakti project, if you will. So again, Radha Raman is Swayam Bhakta Murti, which means self-manifest deity. That's pretty interesting. As you know, the shalagram is made in such a way that if you try to carve a shalagram, it breaks. So it's not possible to carve, even if someone may present that objection. Ah, someone actually carved that. You are creating this history. It's not possible. You try to. I mean, don't try. It's a shalagram. But it will break. So even some scientists I've heard from the Radha Raman Goswami, they have gone there and tried to study like how this is possible and so on, and they don't know what to say. Scientifically proved self-manifest deity, Shri Radha Raman. And for many, Radha Raman is the main deity of the whole of Braj. The deity that encompasses and includes all other deities. For the famous example is when Srila Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was in his very strong campaign of totalitarian world against illusion. He will speak strongly about, I don't know, smarter Brahmins and things like this, Kesh Goswami. So once he went for Braja Mandal Parikram with his associates, and all the temples of Vrindavan closed their doors to him. That's pretty strong. Imagine, you go, let's go to Vrindavan for Parikram, all temples closing the doors, except for Radha Raman temple. So he appreciated that, of course, and since that time there is a very close relationship between the Radha Raman Goswamis and the members of the Bhaktivinod Parivar. But Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta, he took his disciples who were some of them were kind of discouraged, like we came to Vrindavan and we can only enter one temple. But he told them, by having the darshan of Radha Raman, we are having the darshan of all the deities in Vrindavan. So no need to lament. Masru Chaha, don't lament. And in that connection, for example, Narahari in the Bhakti Ratnakar, he's making a comparison to make that point. He's saying, for example, the beautiful face of Radha Raman is compared to the face of Sri Govinda there. Going to these three main deities of Vrindavan. His chest is like the chest of Gopinath, and his feet are like the feet of Madan Mohan. So these three well-known deities of Braj, representing Sambandha, Videya, Prayoja, Madan Mohan, Govinda, Gopinath, are all present in Sri Radha Raman. And again, Sri Radha is not present there in the way we may expect, but somehow she's present there on the inside. There's one little asana, there's one little crown, there's one little umbrella. But it is said that the Goswamis and Radha Raman felt, I mean, there are many ways of explaining this. No? One of them is, if you want to take Radha Raman as only Krishna, because Radha Raman can mean the lover of Radha. It can be a name only for Krishna. Or it can be Radha Raman. Raman only a name for Krishna, which means the one who enjoys. And Radha included in the equation there. But if you want to see Radha Raman only as Krishna, they will say, well, Radha Raman manifested, self-manifested. So, I mean, we don't want to put a sculptured deity of Sri Radha next to him. Because it's not, it has to be self-manifested also, something like that, basically. So, they have put an asana, an umbrella, just in case she wants to manifest. We never know. And of course, another way of explaining that is Radha Raman is Radha and Krishna combined in a particular way. So in that sense, there is no need of an extra Radha. No? So there are ways of, all of the ways we can explain that all of them are equally charming, so there's no problem if you feel more attracted to one or another. And actually, there's one Leela in that connection, interestingly, from the time of Srimati Janava Devi, Narottandas Thakur, Srinivasacharya, and Gopal Bhatta was also. So at one point, it is said that Janava Devi brought a golden deity of Sri Radha to join Radha Raman. And this is Janava Devi. No? It's not Bhakta Mike, with all respect to Bhakta Mike, for sure. Someone is a bhakta, bhakti is there. We are to worship that. But my point is, she was the main authority in the whole Gaudiya community at the time, the senior most Vaishnavi for all, unanimously. So she bought this deity, but Gopal Bhatta Goswami was there, was still on this world, but he was feeling internally, there's no need to put the deity of Radha, because again, he had this epiphany, Radha and Krishna are there fully combined, so there's no need of a separate Radha. But it was Janava Devi, so he wouldn't feel like, no. So he agreed, no? So the deity was put next to Radha Raman, but it is said it was put in the evening or something, so the altar was closed. Next day in the morning, no Radha in the altar. So eventually everyone started to look, and Radha was found in one corner of some other room in the whole compound. Like, and everyone asking, like, do you take, what happened? And nobody, no. Another form of self-manifestation in which she's disappearing from. So they brought her back to the altar, just thinking maybe some pujari got short-circuit and he put the deity somewhere else. But the next day, same situation, in some other place. And for many days. No? So this continued for several days till Gopal Bhatta Goswami has a dream. Interestingly, many times these things are concluded through dreams. And in the dream, Radha Raman is appearing himself to Gopal Bhatta and saying, that deity, he's saying, that deity is actually, this is not Radha. She's my sister, Jogamaya. And you are putting me to sleep every night with my sister, and I have to kick her out every single night. So you have to take her somewhere else, please. That's Rasa Basa. So that's how eventually everyone unanimously concludes, okay. And Janava Devi agrees, okay, Yoga Maya. So the deity now is somewhere else, it's not the Radha Raman temple. So we see this type of very mystical epiphanies that happen around Sri Radha Raman. Also something very interesting in connection to Sri Radha Raman is like the combination of standards you find in that temple. Because for example, this is a very unique combination of South India, Jagannath Puri, and Vrindavan. It's a very Brajavasi-like temple. I mean, you can feel that for those who have been there. But also there are many South Indian influences in the context of how the worship is conducted. And this is coming, of course, from Gopal Bhatta Goswami's influence in being born in South India and so on. So that they had a very special standard. Srila Prabhupada himself, he sent his disciples to learn from the Radha Raman Goswamis about archan. So they conduct itself, the archan, in a very specific way. And the way they cook prasad is very similar to how they cook prasad for Jagannath in Sri Jagannath Puri. They have this like original fire which has never put down since the very beginning, and they cook all with like clay pots and all this type of standard, very much Jagannath-like. And the prasad of Sri Radha Raman also is very, very special for those who have that chance of honoring it. So in this way also, not only the deity in itself, but the temple and the mood of the temple and the worship of Sri Radha Raman includes this very unique blend of influences from this very interesting place, Vrindavan, South India, and Jagannath Puri. And as you may know also, along with Srimati Brinda Devi, Sri Radha Raman is basically the only deity in Vrindavan who never left Vrindavan. Because, as we know, most of the other deities had to be taken to mostly Jaipur, Radha Govinda, Radha Gopinath, Radha Madan Mohan and Karoli, because of Muslim invasions at some point. But somehow, Radha Raman make himself its way to remain in Vrindavan. Maybe it's small, he hid somewhere or something, but he always remained at home, if you will. Of course, Radha Raman in itself is... it's Krishna, and Krishna is, as we like to say, Krishna is God at home. That's our Gaudiya conception. While Narayan is God in the office, basically. God being the cosmic administrator and dealing with so many of these issues. But Krishna is God at home. No? Like the very famous example is, if you are, I don't know, that's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives this example in Raghavarma Chandrika. He says, like the president, he says, like the king. Let's update the version nowadays. The president of the country. So when the president goes to the White House, he will be treated in a certain way. No? Aishwarya will be there. No formality, everything is, I mean, nobody will say, hey, buddy, and make some, I mean, he will lose minimum his job, probably his head as well. So you cannot just embrace and throw him to the ground and make jokes with him in the White House. That's not supposed to happen. So there's a certain way of treating the president. But when the president goes home, back home, maybe his grandson is waiting there. And for the grandson, in his psychology, the president is not coming. Grandpa is coming. And I can jump on him and make him play with me. And he's not thinking about this powerful person that can press a button and throw an atomic bomb to the other continent and make it disappear. He say, I will throw you to the ground now. He's waiting behind the door, and the president enters, and the grandson jumps, and now to the floor, a snake, snake. No? So this president, totally powerful person, is like, no, making his way, trying to be a snake on the floor by the power of love of that five-year-old boy that is, you follow my point? And at that moment, he forgot he's a president. He forgot about atomic bombs and all these issues he has to, he's pretty much occupied with. And he's just thinking, I am his grandpa. That's his abhiman. That's his sense of being. And in a substantial way, that's even more true than I am the president. That's comparatively boring and external. Although most of the people know him as the president, a few people know him as who he actually is. So most of the people know Bhagavan as God, Narayan, Vishnu. This is what he says in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita. But Krishna says, but I'm bored with that type of approach. But a few ones treat me in another way. They do not treat me as God. And that's me. No? So that's Krishna. That's the God we worship. God at home, not God at the office. So Radha Raman is that Krishna at home who always remained at home, who never left Braj. Mm-hmm. A joke comes to mind, that connection. Can I share a joke to make a Siddhantic point? That's a bona fide Gaudiya joke. So I hope you trust me. Maybe you already know that because it's the only joke I know in that context. I'm not a very good joker, but this is a good one. So once, it is said that once there were two friends, childhood friends, and eventually they grow and one of them becomes a Gaudiya sadhu and the other ones become the Pope. Christian personality. So time goes, and eventually when they are adults, they get to know about each other because life took them in different directions, but through whatever, social media or something, they get to know, oh, he's a Pope now, oh, he's a Gaudiya Acharya now, whatever. So they make an arrangement to meet with each other, and the Gaudiya Acharya is invited to visit the Pope in the Vatican. So it's not that much of a big event. It will be the opposite. The Pope goes to Vrindavan, that's another thing. That will happen also. But first, sadhu goes to the Vatican, one more person going to the Vatican. But for the Pope was important, no? My childhood friend, and they start to share stories on how each of them ended in their particular paths and their insects of epiphany, and they're sharing in so many ways. And at one point in the room, there's one red phone in the background.
One what?
Red phone. Telephone. Red phone?
A telephone.
Telephone? We have to travel in time. There were no cell phones in this joke. No. There were these phones that you pick and you speak. So bear with me. It's an old joke. I cannot update the version because the joke won't make sense. So. It's in a joke from the 90s or something. So there was a red phone there. So the Gaudiya sadhu asked the Pope, what's that red phone about? I mean, it was in one corner, like one red phone. What's that? See, that's a phone to speak with God. Say, oh, interesting. Well, so, and the Pope say, you want to try? And say, yeah, I mean, okay, I don't have that many things to tell him now, but I can try. Okay. So he doesn't have to put any number. He just picks and speaks for a few, 2 minutes. Was brief interaction. So then he says to his friend the Pope, so how was the cost of the call? Pope says, well, $300. Okay, you're sticking with God, it's not a cheap thing. So somehow the sadhu did some madhukari and received some donations, so he gives that to the Pope. Okay. So eventually the visit ends and the Pope eventually arranges for visit Vrindavan. The sadhu was living in Vrindavan. So now the Pope goes to Braj. That's a big event. So all the government makes Vrindavan clean for the poor obesity, hiding all the pigs and take care of the monkeys and all this stuff. So eventually the Pope goes and visits the sadhu in his bhajan kutir, which was a very small place, basically. And they are speaking and sharing, honoring prasad. The sadhu takes the Pope to have darshan of Sri Radharaman for sure. And eventually, in the midst of the conversation, a red phone is there in the bhajan kutir as well now. Oh, so the Pope looks at his friend and says, "This is what I think it is." No? So the Gaudiya Sadhu says, "Yes. Just, I knew you were coming, so I mean, you may need that, so that's there." "Oh, okay, can I call? I need to solve a few large list of issues with him, especially Vatican and some political. I have to speak a lot." "So, okay, no problem, call him." So the Pope speaks. He speaks like for 3 hours or something. So, he can afford that, so he has no problem. So at the end of the call, he goes to the Gaudiya chair and says, "Okay, what's the cost of the call?" And the chair says, "Like 100 rupees." "Like what?" "I mean, that's like $2 or something. 100 rupees. $2? But I spoke 3 hours. And you spoke 2 minutes. And it was $300 in the Vatican. But here is 3 hours and $2. And the Gaudiya says, "Well, but this is local call." So that's the God we worship, God at home. That's the point. God at home, local call. So, some words I wanted to share with you today regarding Sri Sri Radha Raman, which, just to conclude and to make one last full circle with your permission, with our Istadev Mahaprabhu, since it's our tradition to always connect all this katha with our Istadev of our sampradayas, the name Radha Raman. Actually, the name Raman, that's the name that Sri Radha is using in the Bhagavatam during the Rasa Lila. When Krishna left the Rasa Lila, as you know, and Sri Radha in separation, he's looking for him and calling him. And in that high of separation, especially Gopi Gita, after the Gopi Gita, as we know, Krishna reappears in the midst of the Gopis, and he will say, "Napari ham nirabhadya samjayam sa sadhu krityam vibhudaya sa pivajam avajan durjara geha shrinkala. Basically, he's saying, "I cannot repay my debt of love with you. May your love be its own reward." But somehow, according to Sanatana Goswami, he interprets the verse saying, "I will come once in a day of Brahma as a sadhu, and I will try to sing your glories and try to make devotees from you. And in that way, try to repay the debt. I know I won't be able, but I cannot just remain doing nothing. So I will appear in that way, in that form." So the point is, in that point, that is the height of the Bhagavatam, of the Rasa Lila, of the union, in which Radha is calling Krishna Raman, in that high point, Gaur Lila is manifesting, blossoming out of the lotus of Krishna Lila. So in this way also we can see how this appearance day of Radha Raman can be connected, this name of Radha Raman, how it appears in that particular point that, if you will, gives birth in time in this world to Gaur Lila, through which we can attain Krishna Lila and Gaur Lila as well for eternity. So anyhow, some thoughts we want to share today in connection to the manifestation of Sri Sri Radha Raman. I don't know if before finishing anyone has any questions or any comments or something you would like to share. Apurva Prabhu?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know everyone has different questions. I will keep it down to just because my service is cooking for Srila Prabhupada, and so I'll keep it down to that. But I'm interested in, did you say that...
I'll repeat later.
Gopal Bhatta was also a cook?
Okay. Raghunath Bhatta was Swami.
What?
Raghunath Bhatta.
Oh, Raghunath Bhatta.
I mean, for sure Gopal Bhatta also cooked for Radha Raman. I won't say he didn't, but Raghunath Bhatta Goswami was especially like famous, if you will, among the Goswamis for his cooking and his recital of Srimad Bhagavatam in four different tunes.
Raghunath Bhatta?
Yeah.
Okay, so you mentioned about the different cuisines from Jagannath Puri and mm-hmm. all the same.
Mm-hmm.
So how did that what is your understanding of how that, why that is, or is it just that's the way it is?
Yeah, to be honest, I will say that's the way it is. But I'm not saying that, that we cannot make some further research about why that is so. For sure, there is a big, there must be a big reason behind it. I'm missing at the point. But why the cooking, the question for those who didn't hear, why the cooking of Radha Raman is so tightly connected with Jagannath Puri and how they do things, why they are doing that in that particular way, I don't know. I don't know if there is any reason. Of course, Jagannath Puri, Mahaprabhu was in Jagannath Puri and many associates were coming and going, but I don't want, of course, to speculate on that topic. So you are giving me some homework to do, so I'm blessed. Thank you so much.
Did you also get the opportunity to take the prasad from Radha Raman?
Yeah. I'm here to tell, to give you the...
How did you manage that? You just give a...
It's not what you know, but who you know. Yeah, even recently when we were in New York with Nam Rasa, one, who was there? Who came? Oh no, some devotee brought like one famous sweet that they made for Radha Raman. They brought like two or three of these little clay pots. So we were like taking every day a little bit, no? We were expecting to follow them, Madhavendra Puri, whose appearance days today. After that, he started to take the clay pots in itself. But yeah, before that, sometimes you go for darshan in Radha Raman and they are sharing on the sides of the altar some of the Mahaprasad. Sometimes they start to throw some of the whatever it is. So you have to be there ready for that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Something else? Kamalini?
So, he was saying how Lord Vishnudeva appeared from the stone pillar. That's his birth, his mother, you could say. So, he lives in Kari Varsha. You know, Kano has explained that Pallad and all of the residents of Kari Varsha, they offer prayers there. Mm-hmm. So, does that mean that planet, so by Kukli planet, that was created after, because he wasn't manifest before that, mm-hmm. So could you say because he manifested that specific form to fulfill
Lord Rama's honesty? My point with saying that that was a specific form was not so much to say that before that moment that form never existed anywhere, but my point was that Prahlad Maharaj's deity is Ishtadev, is not Narasimhadev, but is Krishna. So Krishna manifested that specific form according to the need of the moment. Sometimes Srinadev is said to be the chakra of Krishna taking form, basically. But of course, I didn't intend to say before that, that form never existed because, as we mentioned, I think yesterday, for example, Rupa Goswami in Lagu Bhagavatamrita, they're saying all the forms of Bhagavan, all the avatars, had their corresponding eternal abodes in Vaikuntha. So that means they are eternal. So it's not that they started to appear at some point. Of course, they start to appear at some point, maybe here, but they exist eternally in the Parabhyam. And yeah, the term Hari Varsha basically can be connected to one of those sections. Varsha can many times connected like island. And sometimes Hari Varsha is like the island of Hari or something. And so many times the Bhagavatam is referring to planets as islands. We hear Bhagavad Gita is called Sweta Dweep, for example. And Dweep means an island. I mean, there is a poetry in all that that we need to... For example, Golok Vrindavan is called Sweta Dweep, which means white island. So we may wonder, what's the meaning of that? Right? Golok is not an island, it's not white. Why white island?
Just the ocean of milk is there, no?
There is a connection to that. We can say ocean of milk, but ultimately, what does the meaning of milk in this connection? Because Golok Vrindavan is not that connected with Mahavishnu, or the Purusha avatars, but with Krishna. And there is an ocean of milk in the form of cows. There's milk, a lot of... And milk also represents affection, according to Shastra. Mm-hmm. So there's an ocean of milk. Sometimes the scriptures will speak poetically in this way. So Krishna's living in an island surrounded by an ocean of milk. Not like implying he's totally surrounded by waves and currents of the highest form of affection that is in the Brajavasa's heart. So sometimes these descriptions in Shastra point in that way. Now we need to connect the dots to, okay, that means to that, basically. Because again, Prahlad is not worshiping Nrisimhadev for eternity. That's not his sister there. So,
but it sees everybody there, the demigods, mm-hmm. and also Lakshmi Devi,
That's yesterday I was seeing a video that someone asked the same question to Bhakti Rakakshya Dev Goswami, specifically to Lakshmi. Like, why Lakshmi said, like, I never saw this form before, or I'm even afraid of that. And he nicely mentioned, I mean, we can reply in many ways to that. I'm just quoting what he shared, said. He said that was to highlight the position of Prahlad Maharaj, who was the only one that was able to appease Nrisimhadev. It's not that if Lakshmi will get closer, Nrisimhadev will have killed her. No, I mean, it doesn't make sense. But she expressed herself in such a way so that the position of Prahlad will be highlighted among all. And Prahlad, because in one sense, technically speaking, Lakshmi Devi is above Prahlad. That Lakshmi Devi represents Dasya Bhakti. Prahlad represents Santa Bhakti. But at that specific moment, the arrangement was for Prahlad's glory to be, like, the spotlight will be on him. So he will be the one to get closer, jump, and Nrisimhadev becomes starts to lick Prahlad like a kitten, basically. No? So basically, that will be the idea. Because, again, eternally speaking, Nrisimhadev has his Vaikuntha planet, and Lakshmi Devi is accompanying him there. So it's not that she doesn't know. Of course, we can also say sometimes in the dynamics of the earthly lila, eternal associates for some moment do not know something. Like, I don't know, what we were saying yesterday, when Mahaprabhu is showing us Nrisimhadev and Srivas Pandit, thinking, but he said yesterday that no non-jiva can be Bhagavan. And now he's saying that he's Bhagavan when he's knocking on my door. That who you are worshipping is knocking your door. And Srivas say, but you are not Bhagavan. At one point, the associates of Mahaprabhu were not thinking you are Bhagavan. And at one point of the lila, the epiphany comes, oh, you are Bhagavan, Mahaprakash, lila, and all this. But they are eternal associates, that's my point. I mean, they eternally are with him, but in the chronological unfolding of the lila, they seem not to know, and they seem to gradually get to know. So we could say something also in connection to this situation. I never seen this, and now I'm seeing that, how that plays out in the chronology here on earth. Yes. Okay. Yes, Krishna.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. So to this point, my understanding was that this was about this particular Ugra mode. Mm-hmm. Lakshmi Devi was familiar with Lord Nrisimhadev in his original form, but the mode which Lord Nrisimhadev manifested was just for this particular.
Yeah, that's another point that we can add to the whole thing, because in Vaikuntha, I mean, Vaikuntha means no anxiety. So you imagine if Nrisimhadev enters in Ugra, you have to change the name of the planet, Sakunta, full of anxiety. Everyone will be like, what's going on here now? No, so that's not happening in Vaikuntha. But on Earth, Nrisimhadev had to enter into that mood in order to do what he had to do. I mean, remember the whole... And that's interesting because this connects with the very initial background to the Nrisimha Lila, which is what? Narayan wants to taste Vida Rasa. Remember? Narayan in Vaikuntha wants to taste chivalry mood. That's what he wants. But he doesn't have anyone in Vaikuntha to have a good fight. Because everyone is Shanta. Peaceful meditation on Dasya, servitor mood. And Narayan wants to fight. Imagine, no? Narayan goes to some servant in Vaikuntha, I want a good fight. He said, no, my lord, I'm too soon. So, and he cannot fight with anyone because he wants to taste Vida Rasa. And Rasa can only be tasted by Bhagavan in connection with his devotees. If not, there is no Rasa. So some devotees have to enter into that mood to give him that experience. So there we have Jaya and Vijaya offering themselves, and then the Kumaras came, they cursed them, and they fall from Vaikuntha, quote unquote. Another discussion altogether, nobody fall from Vaikuntha. And eventually that takes place. And Hiranyakashipu is one of them. Hiranyaksha Hiranyakashipu, Ravan Kumbhakarna, Dantavakra Sinsupala, and then encore appearance, bonus track, Jagai Madai in Gorlila. But again, all that has to do, he has to enter into that mood because he wanted to taste that. And in that context, yes, Krishna nicely pointed, Lakshmi Devi. I mean, Narayan is not having a good fight in Vaikuntha, so Lakshmi Vaikuntha never sees that.
I think she did say, I've never seen my Lord in this mood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
Could you, Maharaj, verify? I'm not sure if you ever heard that let's say, bodily features of Radha Ramanditi, that there is a reason why he never holds the flute. He's always putting his elbows. And I don't know if you heard anything to it, explanation.
Yeah. There are different explanations given. Some of them, of course, more confidential than others. And even some of them, the Goswamis of Radha Raman, will say that they reveal during initiation in their lineage that the most esoteric reason why that is so is revealed among them, but they won't share that unless you are initiated into their lineage. But of course, the general technical, more external explanation is Radha Raman is very delicate. The form, the limbs, so putting and taking out the flute may damage his hands. That's one level of explanation. Another level, they say, he's so small, in one sense, that sometimes putting the flute may create some risk that because of the weight, the deity may risk to fall because of the flute. And there are so many other layers of reasons, and one of them also is connected to Krishna. And that's a famous one given in many places. And the Krishna is, as we know, Krishna is described as playing the flute. Jiva Goswami in the Gopal Shampu, he describes Krishna plays. He's practicing his flute playing. I mean, he's pretty good from day one, but he nonetheless he's practicing the enchanting effects. He's the flute playing, and he's corroborating. Oh, what he's doing? He's practicing and. And the whole environment, the trees start to bend and offer fruits, and the cows start to give milk. I say, wow, this is pretty amazing, the effects of this flute. He practices more and more because he wants to get his PhD in flute playing, which has to do, of course, with fully capturing Radha's heart. So it is that he practices and practices, and of course, eventually, he gets to capture Radha's heart, but as we know, this is totally reciprocal, and at the end of the day, she's the one who conquers over him. No? One of her names is Jayashri, which means basically the goddess of victory, and that's why the Gaudiyas mostly cite to that place, like the very end of the... I'm sorry, it seems I'm sidetracking. I'm returning for a minute. In the last part of the Kam Gayatri, one name for Krishna is Ananga, which is a name for Cupid, actually, which means he who is without bodily limbs. Ananga. But Krishna is also known as Ananga, which means it doesn't mean that he becomes burned like Cupid with Shiva did and becomes ashes, but it means that when he becomes pierced by Radha's love, he becomes so much affected by that he becomes Ananga. He becomes unaware of his bodily limbs. That means he's fainting by the impact of Cupid's arrows in the forms of Radha's love to him. So he loses consciousness of himself. And what to speak of playing the flute? I mean, he's gone. So the end is, and of course, we worship that. That means the victory of Sri Radha, basically. No? And Krishna is defeated, falling on the ground. So the idea of Krishna, Radha Raman, not having the flute has to do with this. No? At one point, he becomes so much enchanted by Radha's love that he's playing the flute, no? And practicing. But at one point, he becomes so much absorbed in Radha's love that his fingers keep doing like this, but the flute cut fell all together, basically. No? So ultimately, it's a praise to the impact of her love on him. So he continues moving the fingers. Look, you see, now the hands are there. He's playing. He thinks he's playing. No? But flute is somewhere else. No? And of course, sometimes this is connected with the Bamsi Chor Lila, where this gopi steal Krishna's flute, and that's another series of lilas only in that particular connection, stealing Krishna's flute. But for still in Krishna flute, you have first to take the flute. So how to do that? And this is one of the ways. No? And the love of the gopis is such that it happens by itself. No? The flute starts like to fall, and Krishna just thinks, I'm playing so nicely, I'm playing. But flute is long way away from me. So that's, there are some degrees of those explanations. No? For sure there are many more, but... One more question?
Yeah,
okay.
I appreciate your point on the beginning you made about that the test need to be unexpected to be like a truly viable test. Could you like elaborate a little bit to the point of our individual adhikar and how, you know, all the mental capacity, our, you know, limitations? Because often we hear that Krishna gives us a test which we can, you know, conquer. But often we don't. And like example, you made a little bit later about Lakshmi Bhaji, who wanted to enter into Krishna's pastimes, and she was not able to, you know, to overcome the test which Krishna gave to her.
Yeah, we could say that Lakshmi was not willing to adopt the necessary sadhana to attain that. It's not that Krishna made that impossible for her. The point of the lila is that. I mean, she tried to attain Braja without practicing Raga Nuga Bhakti, basically, without following a Ragatmika, but just engaging in tapas. So that's not the way. No? Like, the point is, every sadhya has a corresponding sadhana. So if you want to attain a particular sadhya or goal, there's a corresponding sadhana. It's not that I engage in any sadhana and I will converge in Golok. Krishna is not that cruel. You follow? I mean, if you don't want to. You have to. Krishna won't send you to a place you don't want to go. But if you want to go to a place, you have to be willing to follow the process that will take you to that place. Not that I will worship Vishnu in Vaidhi Bhakti and I expect to become a Gopa in Vrindavan. That won't happen. Because you are contradicting yourself in how you are approaching the whole thing. So that's one clarification in that connection. But regarding your question, and of course I'll be brief because that requires a whole series of lectures. And recently we lectured on the Brahma Stuti, one famous verse which is pretty much connected that I will recommend if you will like, which is the famous verse, Tatenu Kampam Sushamik Shamanu, in which Brahma is saying, those who really earnestly want your mercy will, while enduring the results of their previous deeds with their mind, body and words, will continuously glorify you, and that people will become right, heir to your lotus feet, basically. And we speak a lot about that, how all the things that come to the life of a devotee. Of course, if someone becomes a bhakta, Krishna takes personal responsibility from that person and starts to intervene directly, if you will, although we may feel it, see it, or not, but he's taking that stance. So, and of course, that's the very beginning of our practice, to have that faith. Krishna, as I said before, he's doing his work. That's one of the aspects of Saranagati. And Saranagati is the external outcome of faith. If you have faith, that faith will play itself out in the form of Saranagati. That's Jiva Goswami's making that poem, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And one of the central aspect of Saranagati is, I accept that Krishna is maintaining me. He's my maintainer. And he's protecting me. I have faith that it's going on. And of course, this is not just some mental conviction. I mean, you have to observe on how and look back and realize, yeah, that's a fact. I mean, it's not that he's not doing his job, as I say before. And of course, we may become assaulted by doubts at some point and think, he's not protecting, he's not with me. But we should be sober and realize, no, that's not the fact. No, somehow or other, I'm trying to play the victim, or who knows, finds which reason for not doing my task. But actually, Krishna is never sending a situation that we cannot pass, a test we cannot pass. Of course, to pass the test, we may have to do something that we are not doing at present. And that's what makes us feel, I cannot pass the test, I cannot pass the test. Krishna is saying, of course you cannot if you don't do that thing that you have to do at this precise moment. And that's why I send the test to begin with. You follow. So if we are not willing to do what we have to do, the change we have to engage in, of course we won't pass the test. But the test came for us to change something. It's not that I will pass the test without changing. There's no test in that case. I mean, if a test comes, you follow my point. I mean, there's no test that won't invite you to change. Which type of test is that? A test is coming, but you have to remain wherever you are in your comfort zone, and you pass your test from there. That's not the test. So any test implies change. So if I do not do my part to do that change, of course I won't pass the test. That is not that the test was impossible. I was not willing to do my part. Just that Krishna did his part. He sent the test. But we have to change. As my Guru Maharaj likes to make this point, spiritual life is about change. Don't forget this single aspect, because sometimes in the name of spiritual life, we may create some spiritual bypassing, some spiritual complacency. No? And I'm a senior devotee, I'm a sannyasi, or I'm this, and so I do not need to change any longer, or not to change as much as I actually should be. So it's delicate, no? Because we have so many absolutes, and such a high developed philosophy that we can think, I belong to this theological elite who have this high refined concept. Yeah, but you have to do your part nonetheless. I mean, that's not an excuse to not do your part, to not change what you have to change today. And tomorrow you will have to change something else. No? That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur said once. He said, today's perfection is tomorrow's imperfection. I mean, not to go neurotic, no? I clarify. Because you can go neurotic with this also. Oh, I always have to change. I will never attain perfection. No, but it's a progressive, dynamic thing. And that's the disposition of everyone in Vrindavan. I mean, anurag means that. Anurag means at every second, Krishna is more beautiful. And at every second, all the devotees increase their love for him to serve that increased beauty. No? Beauty of Krishna increases, bhakti increases to serve that beauty. And when Krishna receives that bhakti, his beauty increases even more. And the love of the devotees increase more so to compensate with that beauty. And in that way, there's a spiral that has no end. So it's dynamic. Always change. Always change. So we want to enter that realm. We have to be willing to change what we have to change here. Still, we want to speak about increasing our anurag. No? Mahaprabhu said, "Endur daiva midrishami hajani nanurag." I don't have anurag, he's saying. In the beginning, we have to acknowledge our lack of that and what we have to do to get closer to anurag. And then it's no end to that journey. So, yeah, keeping good company and being honest and trying to have integrity and reveal our heart to someone we deeply trust may help a lot to have some close well-wishers that are, in a healthy way, pinching us. Because sometimes we know we have to change, but we are not willing, or we don't know what to change. So you need someone else who will know your heart, probably more than you know your own heart, and sadhu, guru, and they will... And we have to open our hearts and trust them, of course. That's a whole... It's a trust issue, basically. Faith from day one to day 108. You know, and faith has to become stronger and stronger. Anyhow.
One last.
Okay. One last question. That, I always hear that many times. There's no last questions. So it's okay, no problem.
I really want to acknowledge you for bringing us, all of us, to a higher level of Braj Bhakti. I lament that I have missed out on a lot. I think this is the first time I've actually sat down and heard. So that was my lamentation. But what I'm eager to hear is, your Guru Maharaj is Tripurari Swami, right? So what other sources have you inspired you and the gurus? And did you meet with Sridhar Swami Maharaj?
Srila Bhakti Rakshak Siddharth Maharaj?
Yes.
Oh, no, I didn't have that fortune. No. Now when he passed away, I was 8 years old, so I was still doing some other things at that time. but I could say I feel very fortunate to have met him in the form, of course, of his books from day one. So from day one that I arrived to the temple in 1999, like 23 years ago, I immediately got to know, of course, Srila Prabhupada, but also Srila Siddhar Maharaj. The two together at the same time. So for me, that was a very very inspiring combination. I mean, that was, I mean, perfect combination. So I grew with those two, no, sources of nourishment and inspiration in a very, that I will say that really carved me, if you will. As my Guru Maharaj likes to say, I'm the, he says, when someone is saying something to him, say, I'm the result of the combined grace of my gurus. No. So, of course, I'm saying the same thing here now. I'm the result of the combined grace of my gurus. It's not about me. It's about what they pour on me, how that combined in a particular way and gave the particular shape. It's not about I am the protagonist here. No, I'm just the container, and they are carving that in a particular way. And of course, my Guru Maharaj in that sense embodies a lot these two influences because he was connected with the two of them. So, and yes, in the context of that, so many other influences. I mean, I could be 3 hours naming all the people that are nourishing my life, so it may be too long, but so many personalities. It's difficult to start to mention, say, oh, this, and this. No, I mean, I enter into anxiety if I have to enumerate all of them. But to be, of course, there are so many levels of that connection and inspiration, but all of you are part of the equation, for sure, no? By seeing your sincere question and the way you are presenting and reacting to anything I'm saying, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say. I mean, I'm speaking here, I have the mic and this big seat and all this fancy stuff around me, but me, at least, you are minimum 50% of the equation of whatever may be happening here now, if it's nice. If it's not nice, I'm 100% of the equation. But if it's nice, you take credit. Minimum 50%, for sure more. No? So, because if I will be saying all the things and the room is empty and I have to speak to the wall, probably I wouldn't be that inspired. I'm inspired, but you are guilty for that. No? So... I'm not the source of my own inspiration. That's the point. So we derive inspiration. So that's how Sadhu Sangha works. No, and you may feel, no, Maharaj, you are giving us support. And I feel, no, you are giving me support. I will be quarreling forever, and we will never agree. And both of us are probably right, if you will. That's how Bhakti works through us. That's what Srila Sila Maharaj said once when he was asked, and with this I close, I hope. someone asked him, what's Sadhu Sangha? Can you describe Sadhu Sangha? And he invoked Napoleon. I said, what? Everyone was expecting which sloka will he quote. I said, it's like the chair that Napoleon made once. I said, what? Napoleon chair. Yeah, he said, when all his soldiers were in Europe, in a very cold place, and they have to spend the night without shelter, and it was so cold that they will fall asleep on the ground, they may die because it was snowing. So Napoleon made... put all of you in a circle, and they say to one soldier, you sit like if you were a chair. In this point. And the next one in front, you sit like if you were a chair, and all of you in the same way. So one was being the chair for another one, and another one was being a chair for that person. So one was giving support to someone, but was receiving support simultaneously. So he said, that's Sadhu Sangha. So one is feeling, I'm being nourished and being supported, but the other person is feeling, someone is giving me nourishment and support. And that's paramparavis. So that's how the magic comes to us. So thank you so much for reaching your, extending your magic to me as well. That's mercy. So.
Thank you so much for giving me.
Jai. 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 J